Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. With me this week are my fantastic co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. And if this wasn't a Blizzard-focused podcast where we just occasionally veer out, I would be asking both of them why the Fantastic Four just can't get a movie adaptation that isn't bad. But I'm not going to ask that question because, well, quite frankly, we don't have time.
And next podcast during our pre-show, I will try to sell Liz on a Doctor Who thing.
Yes. But go ahead.
Do we have the impression that that's going to make that's going to take a lot of effort?
Well, it involves Magic the Gathering cards because they're making a Jodie Whittaker deck.
We really don't have time for my thing about how Jodie Whittaker should have had like at least one more season, but
or how Jodie Whittaker was an actress wasted on a poorly written season that she was more deserving of better, absolutely deserved better writing.
I would argue that. There's a lot of validity to that, but we don't have time, unfortunately.
Next show.
There's so much we could say, and we've only got an hour.
Yeah, and some of that hour has to actually be about, you know, Blizzard stuff. So
yeah, probably.
First thing I'm going to throw out there is on August 1st, we're going to get the Titans expansion for Hearthstone. This is an expansion that is tempting me to play Hearthstone. You have no idea how hard that is because I don't like playing Hearthstone. Not because it's bad, because I don't do card games very well. I'm not good at the deck building, thinking 20 moves ahead to when I can finally drop my gigantic monster thing and mess up the other person type gameplay. When I played Magic the Gathering, literally I fell asleep. I'm not even kidding. I mean, granted, I was incredibly drunk, but still, I fell asleep during that game. That's how little I understood it or liked it. So whenever Joe talks about Magic, I always feel like, man,
I can feel your eyes glazing over. I got it.
I feel like I come from another dimension where they didn't have this, except I remember full well when Magic first came out. I do. Magic is one of the reasons that Wizards got the money to buy D&D.
It is very much the reason they got the money to buy D&D.
Well, Pokemon cards, too. Let's not forget Pokemon cards. But regardless, Titans expansion looks really cool to me. I like all the Titan cards and the ideas behind it. I think it's a more innovative set than they've had in a while. And that's not me saying that the other sets haven't been innovative. At least on a story front, Hearthstone has never put out an expansion that I thought was a bad idea narratively. Like I'm still a fan of like some of the ones from like earlier, like the Witchwood one, or that trilogy of supervillains, including Dr. Boom. Was it Dr. Boom?
Dr. Boom.
Yeah,
Dr. Boom. Because it was a Dr. Doom parody.
Yeah, his whole cadre of supervillains trying to steal Dalaran and put rockets on it so they could use it in yet another evil scheme.
To be fair, Dalaran needs rockets.
Yeah. So just Hearthstone's done a lot of things I really liked. I would actually say it's done a lot of things I would like to see in World of Warcraft. Meet Streets of Gadget Zan. I don't understand why when they did Cataclysm, they didn't turn Gadget Zan into the thing from Meet.
Oh, they should. Like, they should have. It was such a missed opportunity.
So Liz, good. You were saying? I'm sorry.
The problem I have with Hearthstone. Well, I mean, I could make a list, but the problem I have is that it comes up with these such good story ideas, such interesting story ideas, such interesting takes on lore, especially now with Titans. I mean, I'm playing World of Warcraft, and that's the lore we're delving into. And so I'm really curious to see Hearthstone's take. And Hearthstone's take is going to be, okay, here are these cool cards, and they do these cool things, and there's kind of a little story behind them if you go and you read the flavor text and all this. But Hearthstone hasn't done any story modes. It hasn't done any single player modes in a while. And yeah, those were always interesting.
When was the last one they actually did? I want to say it was during one of the Lich King expansions.
No, it's been more recently than that. They did Book of the Heroes. Yeah, I think it was Book of Heroes that they were rolling out one chapter for each of the like new heroes that they were doing in the expansion that I want to call Battle for Azeroth, but it was not Battle for Azeroth because that's a different game. But yeah, they've really backed off on the single player adventures, which is sad because that was a really interesting storytelling medium.
Okay, the first one for Book of Heroes was September 2020.
Book of Mercenaries, Pidia is telling us in chat.
Well, I'm following Book of Heroes here, and that was 2020. I don't know about Book of Mercenary. But Jaina Proudmoore got a story in it, and that was...
Oh, that was...
Again, this is Book of Heroes, not Book of Mercenaries. I didn't look that up.
It was... Book of Heroes was single-player stories about classic Warcraft characters, and Book of Mercenaries was single-player stories about original Hearthstone characters.
That was 2021. So, yeah. That was 2021. So, okay, cool. I'm very fast at typing when I need to answer a question.
it's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been 2 years, more than 2 years, because mm-hmm. This was April. I guess the last new characters releasing until March 17th, 2022. So it's been a year and change since the last one they did. So it would be a cool thing to see more of it, quite frankly.
Like the whole thing about stealing Dalaran and slapping rockets on Dalaran, that was a whole huge single player adventure that went across 3 expansions. And it was really cool and fun, and it gave you this whole zany narrative for an entire year. And they haven't done something like that, where they've tried to make a big cohesive narrative, a big cohesive crazy World of Warcraft in Hearthstone. Even Book of Heroes and Book of Mercenaries were just little one-offs about specific characters. It was a series of single player missions about that told the story of a specific character, and it was, you know, a little adventure. They linked together. They told some interesting stories, but it wasn't like this big game narrative that they've done before, and they have not done that in quite a while.
Have you guys like looked at Legends of Runeterra at all?
I have tried to play it and it has not clicked, so I haven't looked at it very hard.
Joe? I don't know if Joe's currently not here.
Apparently have hard muted myself and then forgot to push the button. Yes, I actually played a bunch of it.
One of the things I did like about it was how they did character narratives in it. I didn't manage to get very far with the game mechanics, but I did like, for example, the Jinx storyline actually touched upon a lot of stuff you see in Arcane, just slightly more tongue-in-cheek and friendly and less, you know, heartbreak and tragedy. Man, that Arcane, the last couple episodes
of Arcane,
just, whew. But regardless, I did like what they were trying to do with it. I do think that is something that Hearthstone does really well when they do it. And it is unfortunate that they're not doing it as much recently. But yeah, maybe Titans has some or will have some. I would love if they put in some single player stuff. Because like I said, I really want to, if nothing else, I want to see what's going on with all this. You know, like what the lore they came up with for the characters they're using. For instance, the Primus, I want to see more of that. Because I still have my suspicions about the Primus. Let me put it that way. I have not let that guy off the hook yet. There's something going on with him. We made that whole Crown of Wills thing, and he kept it. Like, I don't recall us bringing it back with us to Azeroth. He still got it. Why does he need that hat? Now that we've supposedly broken Domination Magic, I will remind you, he made up, you know, Domination Magic. That was his deal. So yeah, I'm suspicious of that guy. So yeah, go ahead.
Just like us, the Primus will do anything for transmog.
Yeah, well, it's very pretty.
just tighten things.
Yeah. In addition to that, I guess we should probably mention We'll go with Legion Time Walking because that's this week in World of Warcraft. If you are
Chad is actually correct, and we don't get the crown back because the Arbiter wears the crown.
Ah, I got my eyes on you, Pelagos. but yeah, regardless, I think the Legion Time Walking is interesting because you get the Legion raid. You get Ulduar as a raid too during that period, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Are you guys going to be running it?
It's on the docket. So our guild is, we just got ahead of the curve for Sarkareth, and we just finished achievements. I got the really odd mount, and it is definitely odd. So
I don't know what you're saying. That's great. It's a great mount.
It is. I always thought the Netherray model was weird.
I mean, it's a Netherray, but also it's on fire, and yeah, it's great. It's great.
Well, anyway, we tend to like do stuff like this in the time between expansions. So it's on the docket, but it is as a potential, but it's not set in stone. So we kind of split into smaller groups and spend some time.
All right. Nevertheless, though, if you are currently playing World of Warcraft, time walking weeks are great because you can just do like four of them. Is it four or five? Do you need to do four or five time walking days?
Usually it's five.
Okay, so you just run five of them and you get a pretty good reward. I think it's at least as good as like a heroic first raid tier boss, but I'm not 100% sure on that because, like I said, I haven't been playing it because Diablo 4 exists and I literally can't do anything else.
It's five.
Okay. But yeah, time walking, that's pretty cool. We also know there's going to be some class changes. They've made various buffs and nerfs. They nerfed Guardian Druid's ability. They had a cooldown that does 60% damage reduction. They've nerfed it to 50%. That's basically it for Guardian Druids, the only thing they've changed. But they also boosted the damage of a couple of different tanks. Blood Decay's got 10% across the board, like every ability they have pretty much will now do an extra 10% damage. And Prot Warriors got 7% on their attacks and abilities. I'm not sure why they got 7% and the Blood Decay's had 10%. On my Blood Decay, I never feel like I'm weak. But regardless, they did that as well to try and shake up the tanking meta a little bit. But Augmentation Evokers, however, they got a pretty big nerf to their like buffs that they put out. And then as to recompense them for it, they're getting their actual damage on their abilities raised to compensate. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, on the one hand, a lot of people have been telling me that Augmentation Evokers are stupid broken in five mans, especially Mythic Plus.
They're not that bad. It depends on what you have in your group. So we've determined from experimentation at the very least that certain classes benefit more from Augmentation Evokers than others. So like a Beastmaster Hunter, for example, really doesn't gain a whole lot of benefit from it, but a Shadow Priest just becomes an unstoppable juggernaut of shadowy pain. So like it really does depend on what you have with you.
Well, one of the things they talk about was how closest clutch mates now causes Ebon Might and Breath of Eons to be 20% more effective when not in a raid. It used to be 40%. So I know Ebon Might, these are like all abilities that they use to buff other people. And it's interesting to me to see these things get nerfed, especially this early in the augmentation lifecycle. I mean, they just came out in 10.1.5, right?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, if you think of it from terms of like the same way they balance hero specs, sometimes that just happens. How many times did Demon Hunters get patched within the first couple weeks of their life? Evokers in general just got
Demon Hunters. Demon Hunters didn't get stopped by a single one of those nerfs, though.
It's like Holy Paladins got their big rework, and then it lasted one reset before it got nerfed.
Mm-hmm. They have apparently protection paladins have gotten an ability damage increase by 8%. So they're also getting buffed for tanking in mythics.
Blizzard seems to be really proactive about doing buffs and nerfs just very quickly. This expansion, we've been seeing a lot of this where they're like, they see a problem and they make adjustments. They listen to feedback and they make adjustments. So
yeah,
I think it's good. I don't always like it when they nerf me, but I think it's good that they're paying attention and they're trying to hit this kind of balanced sweet spot.
I was actually surprised to see that they've buffed all healing by Resto Shaman by 5%.
Oh, that's not a surprise. They had no choice.
The range of restoration mists heals from Ascendance is now 40 yards, and the initial burst of healing from Ascendance remains at 20 yards. So the mist now heals more, but the initial burst of healing is still the same, which, I mean, okay, I don't get why you would do that, but it would make it easier for people to move in and out of range, at least. So that's good for the various fights where you have to get out of range of things. You'll still have the thing ticking away a heal on you as you're moving. So that's good. But yeah, there's also a lot of player versus player changes, but I am not qualified to judge these.
I haven't PvP'd at all this expansion.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that I looked at, just because I know warriors well enough to at least kind of grok it, and it's fine. They're buffs, which is good, but there should be more buffs. Warriors should kill everybody in PvP and be unstoppable gods. But, you know, if you want a fair game, then yeah, sure, they're fine. But that's not really my thing. I just wonder, do you think this is going to actually matter in Mythic Plus? Like, because in my opinion, a lot of times the idea that there's certain classes that you have to bring to succeed in Mythic Plus is really oversold. Like, you can clear 10 to 15s with just about any class. Like, it really doesn't matter. It's only if you're pushing, like, the highest possible setup, you know?
So, having done a bunch of higher level keys this time around, or at least attempting to in this one, I think there is actually something to it, especially with all the changes they made in the last patch. I think it was more you could do whatever you wanted with whatever group as long as you were good enough prior to it, but it did shift balances around quite a bit. Like, you know, I'm not harping on like the Resto Shaman stuff, but Resto Shaman went from being like perfectly viable to, and me like being feeling comfortable doing like, you know, a 17, 18, 19, 20 to me feeling like I couldn't do a 14. And that may not sound like a lot to people, but that's a huge, huge step back in confidence. And I'm not exactly a slouch when it comes to healing. So, and your mileage may vary, but I think they're trying to rebalance that to get back to that point where you don't have classes feeling like runaways, but you also don't feel like they're incapable of keeping up.
I just wonder if it's going to matter. Like, will people let this information reach them?
Oh yeah.
So they, you know, that's the thing I'm worried about.
Pre-done groups have been very, it's interesting. So I used to joke about like the, I used to call it the Resto Shaman tax. There was a point in time where, like, last expansion and then a little bit early on in this expansion, Resto Shaman were not exactly looked at as viable to take with you on these journeys. And so, like, applying for group keys, like, going into keys during the pre-done group make finder, you would get rejected no matter what your skill level was. Or at least my experience was that. And then after we got, you know, a little bit of loving and started doing some crazy numbers, the community all of a sudden, like, it wasn't that hard to get into groups anymore. And then it went right back. So it's been, at least from my anecdotal evidence, the community is ebbing and flowing very much with how things are shaping up.
All right, Liz, you got anything you want to say about this?
One thing that they've done for augmentation evokers is they've improved combat log support again.
Oh, right. I was going to mention that. If you go, please talk about it.
Yeah, well, I don't entirely understand what they've done here. The exact patch note is the advanced combat log now more accurately attributes support events for pet guardian summons damage, summons damage accumulator, delayed damage effects, like execution sentence ignite, and damage against armored targets. So I think one of the problems augmentations had is that their damage contribution isn't reflected on damage meters, because it's not so much their damage, but damage they're helping other players do. And I think that's given them kind of a bad rep. I mean, obviously, we've seen how amazing augmentation can be, particularly in a very coordinated group where they're really making use of those buffs. But, you know, I think the average player, you know, you take an augmentation evoker and you look at the combat log and you're like, oh, they're not doing any DPS. So I think combat log improvements are really going to be, this is kind of the first step towards acceptance of this spec. So did they need nerfs? I think probably so, because we've seen crazy things where you take like all augmentation evokers and one mage and you one shot everything ever that ever existed. But the average player doesn't see, I don't think they see gameplay like that. They look at the combat logs and they're like, augmentation is terrible. So
that's fair. That's fair. It is something that we really do need to see in general, not just for augmentation evokers. We need to see better reporting of stuff like that, because there's other classes that provide buffs and they shouldn't be, you know, if you stop to cast, say, Time Warp, it shouldn't, it will affect your DPS. It just, this is a fact. Your DPS will be lower for a couple seconds. And that kind of thing adds up. And people need to realize, you know, when he hit Time Warp, everybody else's DPS went up. And that's a trade-off that he's making. You shouldn't necessarily have a character get punished for that. But, you know, I do definitely think we needed more combat log stuff.
The other thing about that, too, is also keep in mind that the combat log stuff is also things that have been affecting other classes for a while. Any classes that had pets or talents that did stuff on their own, or trinkets that created something that caused healing or damage or things like that, sometimes weren't always reporting the most accurately. So the augmentation evokers, thankfully, have also caused the combat logging to sort of be fixed for that as well, incidentally. So it's a good thing overall.
They threw attention on it. But speaking of attention being thrown on things, this is something that Liz had to tell me about because I had missed it when I was looking at various other things. But there's a new combat mode for Overwatch's arcade.
Yeah, it's just a new arcade event.
You described it as hide and seek.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not playing Overwatch right now, so I have but it's called Mischief and Magic. It is a prop hunt mode, which it sounds like hide and seek to me. I mean, that's just you've got people who are hiding and people who are finding the people who are hiding.
Prop hunt. It's prop hunt. Kinda. Same principle. Hide and seek.
I don't really know prop hunt, so.
I'm not familiar with that. Explain it to us, Joe.
I don't know if this is the case like for Overwatch particularly, because I haven't really looked at the details, but prop hunt is teams of seekers and hiders where like hiders can tuck themselves as copies of objects in the world and try to orient themselves to outlive a timer without being found or shot or whatever the case is. But it's an old game mode that's been around for a very long time. I'm actually surprised it took that long for something similar to hit Overwatch. So, yeah, Overwatch 2 Prop Hunt is literally the tag that we put on there. So I'm looking at it. That's exactly what it is. Okay, yeah, so I'm right. So, yeah, you... sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just laughing.
Yeah, so it's basically like, what if it was players trying to find mimics is really what it boils down to. I think that's the best context people can.
But the mimics are also players.
The mimics are also players that are trying to survive and not get caught. But yeah, you mimic stuff in the background, like you could become a barrel or a minecart or something like that, and then you try to position yourself in such a way that you blend in with the background naturally enough, or the terrain naturally enough that you're not noticed, and then it leverages people's knowledge of the map and where stuff is supposed to be. And in a game like Overwatch, it's actually interesting because there's no add-ons for it, so you can't cheat, or at least not as easily. I'm not going to say you can't cheat because, well, that'd be a false statement. But
everyone eventually finds a way to cheat and come on.
Yeah, but that's all it is. It's prop hunt, and you know what? I'm okay with it. Curb it, take it, as long as you do it well and people are having fun. I'm all for it.
All right. Well, since we're talking about Overwatch 2, this gives me a segue, and I'm going to use it because I'm bad at segues. There's a Twitch drop and a Amazon Prime Gaming tie-in that you can get for Overwatch. The Twitch drop is the Path to Pro Summer Season. Campaign 2 just ended on the 16th of July, but Campaign 3 is starting up on August 21st. And basically, you've got to watch people playing Overwatch 2. That's how Twitch drops generally work. That's how this one works. You just got to watch a bunch of it. I think that you might have to actually watch, you know, like some of the like people getting ready to try and get ready for the next season of Overwatch 2. But I honestly couldn't understand half of the things that the Twitch was telling me about it. So, yeah, but it is happening on August 21st is going to be the next season. Just missed one, unfortunately, because we're doing this on the 25th. So, yeah, that was last week. It ended a little bit more than last week, but. Regardless, there will be a new campaign on the August 21st, and then there's more campaigns coming in the future. There will then be a winter season And they will have their own campaigns as well. So it's a long running thing Twitch is doing. So you still have a chance to get the various rewards involved there. But go ahead.
Lately, it really feels like any time you want to do, like, there's almost always a Twitch drop.
Mm-hmm.
And there's almost always an Amazon Prime Gaming drop. So yeah.
Why am I hearing this in the narrator's voice from BioShock? There's always a lighthouse. There's always a Twitch drop.
I was hearing it like, if you guys have ever played the Stanley Parable.
Yes.
I was hearing it like the narrator from the Stanley Parable. I don't know, Reinhardt, you know. That's what I'm going to point out is that Amazon Prime's tie-in to Overwatch is actually a Reinhardt Conductor Legendary skin.
It's a really cool skin.
Yeah, which is available until August 17th. So if you want to get something from Amazon Prime for Overwatch, that's how to do it. Hearthstone's got something that's available till August 23rd, but it's not very. It doesn't tell you much other than it's a random standard epic card.
Like it just means
a random standard epic card. So one of the various standard epic cards, you get one of them.
Usually there's a new Hearthstone drop about once a month. I say drop, but I mean an Amazon Prime Gaming reward about once a month, and it's like it's usually a random card, a random epic, or a random legendary. Sometimes it's packs, but they do the random card a lot, and it's gonna be a card you don't have.
Yeah,
that's just how. Hearthstone has a duplicate protection system where it will not give you duplicates until you already have every card of that quality level in that set. So you're going to get a card you don't have, and that's pretty nice.
Yeah. I checked on Twitch drops. There wasn't one available on Twitch when I checked, so Hearthstone's not getting one of those. But there's also a Diablo 4 mount that's still available. The mount armor is the Brackish Fetch mount armor, which is available until August 3rd, so next week. And don't know if Amazon Prime is going to then have another Diablo tie-in. And I couldn't find any ones for World of Warcraft. If there are some, nope. I didn't see any.
I think one just ended today. So, basically no.
While we're talking about that, though, the kind of thing you usually get as a World of Warcraft Amazon Prime reward or Twitch drop, there's a new couple of pets that you can pick up, but they're not from Amazon or Twitch. They're actually cards you buy from World of Warcraft, but they're basically charity pets. You guys remember charity pets. We used to do them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, aren't they literally charity pets?
Yes, they are absolutely charity pets. They're Sunny, which is a cute little golden doggy, and Flurky, who is a cute little blue Murloc, if you like Murlocs. And if you don't like Murlocs, you know, then you probably won't like it. Sunny is the retail World of Warcraft pet, and Flurky is the WoW Classic pet. And they seem to both be on sale at the same time. Like, if you buy one, you get them both. I'm not sure exactly how this works, because I did watch the video, but Mila Kunis did not actually explain how the purchasing goes. She just talked about why they're doing it. And, you know, if you don't know what's going on in Ukraine, I don't think I can encapsulate the situation in the time of this show. Let's just say things are really bad in Ukraine. They are at war, and they are fighting against a supposed world power that is trying to invade their country. So, and has taken quite a bit of land in the past. So yeah, that's happening. And the cool thing about the charity in question, which is called Blue Check, is that Blue Check is not really like one charity. It's more like a bank of charities. And like, when a situation is such that, you know, the country needs food, oh no, now they need medicine more than food. Oh no, now they need this other thing. Blue Check can pivot to whatever the need is, supposedly. I don't know anything about them other than Liev Schreiber is apparently involved. Like, finding out that Sabretooth is involved in this charity did kind of throw me for a bit. But yeah, that's happening. You can go buy the two pets from the Blizzard store, and it's the proceeds. We will donate all proceeds. There's stars there, so I'm sure there's something involving this. It's, you know, from July 25th to August 29th, 100% of the proceeds. Okay. So yeah, if you buy it during that period of time, all of the money is going to this charity to try and help the people of Ukraine. So I think that's probably worth doing. It's up to you guys, though. You were saying, Liz?
One thing that's interesting, as you said, this is two pets, one available for retail, one available for classic. And I mean, in the past we've done charity pets and there's just been the one pet, and it's always been obviously for retail. They haven't added They've just started doing these pets specifically for Classic. And this is a $20 purchase, which, I mean, okay, it goes to a good cause. All good. We're giving money to charity. But previously, they've done charity pets. It's been a single pet for $10. So that's just, okay. This has just gone up. The price has doubled, and I get one pet.
Yeah, I mean, you get one pet unless you're playing both games, I guess.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, though, because it's like, you know, why is it they wanted it flirky because they didn't think the Sunny would look good in WoW Classic? I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's
because maybe it's reasons.
I think it could just be that they felt, well, if we're going to charge people twice as much, we do need to give them two pets, and this is a way to give them two pets. Although you don't really have two pets if you're not playing both games. And I don't know many people who are spending a lot of time playing both WoW Classic and World of Warcraft just because it's a lot of time, man.
Who's got time?
I mean, it's like, okay, I'm done with my 6-hour shift on WoW Classic. I'm going to punch in on World of Warcraft now. You know, it's just, you know, that it gets to the point where, you know, do you get to eat anymore? Do you sleep? Are you doing that thing where you micro sleep and then every time something happens, you jerk awake?
I once sleep healed a raid. That was fun.
Yeah. I've actually sleep tanked. I sleep tanked on Kael'thas because I literally passed out. We did like 12, 13 attempts and I was just getting really tired and I kind of just nodded off during the extremely long discussion of what we were changing in the poll. And then apparently just while not quite coming to consciousness, I just managed to move my character into position and keep hitting the shield when it came up.
Don't tell our raid, but Sire Nathrius kill. I don't remember phase two.
Like, does at all. Remember phase two of that fight?
Like, jeez. I don't remember phase two. Like, I know I was there for phase one. I was there. Like, I remember having phase three start. I don't remember anything that happened in phase two. I'm pretty sure I zonked out.
Yeah, well, quite frankly, I don't blame you. I would have done that too. Anyway, that's happening. I do think it's interesting that they've decided to put a pet up for both games, but the price jump is pretty substantial. It is nice that it's going to charity, but if you're used to spending like, you know, $10 on a pet, you know, you're now, if you don't play both games, you're basically paying twice as much for a pet.
Yeah, I mean, it's, on one hand, it's hard to object. This is going to a good cause. And on the other hand, I was like, oh, wait, I was going to just click this button and buy it, but it's actually twice as much as I thought it was going to be. I should still just.
Yeah, I'm saving for Phantom Liberty, guys. I'm gonna have.
Well, yeah, that's fair too. That's fair.
But I will say, we've talked now about pretty much everything except. I may want to make sure I actually talked about the thing that. Yeah. Okay. No, we did talk about that. It's Prop Hunt. We haven't really talked about the season one launch because that was last week. I believe it was actually the day after we did the podcast, right?
2 days after the podcast. 2 days. We're talking about the Diablo. Diablo 4 season 1.
Diablo 4 season 1.
Just to get everyone listening out there on the same page.
Yeah. But that launched last week and we haven't really talked much about it. I've been playing it really casually. Like I go in and I play one character with my wife and I have another couple characters I play when my wife and I aren't playing together. And I've been, you know, I've been having fun and playing it. I think I've played it literally every day. But I'm not trying to burn my way to max level or anything. Quite frankly, I've got like 90 days or so. Not quite, but like 80 something. And I don't feel the rush. Like if I don't get to max level in the season, then I'll just go back to my main and work on them. It is what it is. I'm enjoying it, but I understand that some people who have been really trying to get to max level as fast as they can and start hunting for those various malignant, you know, hearts. Some people are reporting being like, you know, oh God, this is like such a, it's kind of a rampage. It's very hard to a lot of people weren't even be able to get malignant hearts because they didn't realize that you had to be on the quest first or they just weren't dropping. So a lot of people didn't try to farm them. At least that's what I was told. Go ahead.
I'm just taking a step back and talking what season one is. The malignant hearts are the season's theme. It's the season of the malignant. And basically you're going out and you're killing these malignant monsters. You're trying to claim their hearts. And then you're doing what any good RPG adventuring character would do is you take these hearts and you shove them into your jewelry and just wear them.
Hey. First you put the hearts in a cage, then you use the cage to the cage summons an even more powerful monster, and then you kill that monster and use its heart in the cage.
Yeah. I'm summarizing like a tiny bit. You're shoving.
We have a process. That's all I'm saying. This isn't just haphazard.
You're shoving monstrous hearts into your jewelry and then wearing them around. But yeah, the thing is, you have to complete the campaign and do part of the quest chain before the hearts will start dropping. So yeah, I have seen some people who are definitely confused. Hey, I'm playing through the campaign. Where are these hearts? Everyone's saying these malignant hearts, but they aren't here. And it's because the quest is post-campaign. And if you don't skip the campaign, you need to play that through beginning to end first.
Yeah.
Of course, you can activate the campaign skip at any time. Even if you originally go in and say, I'm going to play the campaign, you can campaign skip from the character select screen.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have looked at the actual lore of what's going on. It's actually a little bit more in-depth than we've been led to believe. Like, there's a connection to Lilith in all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tied to the story of the game more than I was led to believe. So I'm actually pretty excited about it. Although I do think it's kind of, I feel really bad for this poor guy who is basically just him and his wagon. He's been attempting to stop these, you know, demonically possessed people from like rampaging through the world. And it's like, just you in the wagon then? That's it?
Well,
that's the entire support structure? I had some friends, but they're all dead now.
Like, yeah, okay. If you watch the trailer for Season of the Malignant, you see he is pictured surrounded by a group of other adventurers. And then as the trailer continues, one adventurer disappears from the art, another adventurer disappears from the art. And then it's just him. It's just Cormond. Cormond? Do I have that right?
Yeah, Cormond. Yeah, it is Cormond. I was calling him Cormac for a very long time. No, it's Cormond.
It's hard. It's so hard.
Have you guys been playing? I'm pretty sure Liz, you might have, but
I've been playing some. I just haven't had a ton of time to really dig into it, so I'm playing pretty casually. And I miss my previous character because I didn't hit level 100 before getting to this, and it feels like I was at this like good place with gear, and I had an interesting build, and I had an interesting combination of items, and now I'm starting over with less gear, and it's. I'm having a little trouble getting excited about it, but I just have a lot of demands on my time right now. So maybe I'm just that's kind of bleeding into my playstyle. Like, well, this is kind of not super fun to start over, but also a lot of the stuff is going on because life. Yeah.
If I'm finding it hard to put more than 2 hours a night into the game, quite frankly, just because, you know, for one thing, sleep, also, you know, reading, taking care of things around the house, eating, you know, the various things you have to do.
Yeah.
So, Joe, have you gotten to play it at all?
It's been interesting because I haven't really had time. I had a problem at the beginning of the season. So I went to go create a seasonal character, and everything went fine. I was like, you know what? I'll play. I've been wanting to play Rogue, and I'll go ahead and do that for the season. It'll be fun. So I went to go roll a character, and for the first like day, I couldn't create a character that could skip the campaign. Mm-hmm. It was really, really weird. And like the next day, like I think I created and like deleted a couple characters and then created another one. I wasn't able to get one until like a day and a half, 2 days later. And then I just been so busy since. So I've gotten very, very, very little time in.
Did you log your main in?
Yes.
And then it started working?
Yes. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. You had, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that to you. That's one of the things that they said, you know, in order for all your achievements and stuff to work, in order for the game to know that your character has done the things that'll carry over, you need to log them on first.
See, and I think I missed that part. I missed that part when I was reading through it. And so like, okay, so it wasn't a weird bug. It was just me being dumb. Okay. That happens.
Yeah. It wasn't a bug. It was the way they designed it. And they even explained in one of the chats that the reason that they know that that's not a great system, but it was like,
it's not intuitive.
Yeah, people wanted this, and we had no intention of doing it. But now that we know people want it, we're going to give it to them. But unfortunately, we go to the engineers and like, okay, can you do this? And they're like, well, do you want it to work and be good, or do you want it now? Because I can give it to you now, but it's going to require that you people do dumb things to get it to work. Or you can give me 6 months to actually build a system. And they're like, yeah, do the first one. Yeah, we don't have speed runs.
That was because they had changed what transfers between your characters.
Yes,
they changed
exactly.
Things that were account wide, so that you got all of your Altars of Lilith. You had them across all your characters, and you had them across your seasonal characters. And all of your map discoveries and your Fog of War were based on the most you've discovered on any character.
Yep.
So yes, seemingly making that change meant you had to log in and make the game like refresh its knowledge about where you were.
Yeah, it is obnoxious, and they know it's obnoxious, and they didn't want to do it, but it was like, okay, people said they want this stuff to transfer. We've said we will give it to them. Now we have to come up with a system for it, and it has to be here in like 2 weeks. And that's why the system works the way it does. I remember at the time thinking that is a refreshingly honest admission of why the system is the way it is. Like, it's bad because we didn't have time. I've never heard them say that before, you know, and it kind of flew. It's still to this day. I every so often stop and remember them saying that. I'm like, man, that's up front. So yeah, but that's the issue. That's why you were having that issue. And I am sorry I didn't talk to you.
No, and part of it is me. Like, I don't know how I missed that. Like, it makes sense in retrospect.
It's not written down. You know what? It's not written down in any of Blizzard's official stuff. They don't tell you. They just told you on the chat.
I kind of wish that what they would have done is, I kind of wish it, like, when you logged into the game, there would have been a pop-up that said that. I don't know if there is now, because I've already done it, so I don't know if it comes up. But, like, something that popped up would have been real nice to say, hey, to transfer everything. Gavlin says there was a pop-up in-game. I didn't see a pop-up. So
I saw a pop-up, but I don't remember it saying you needed to log on to your characters. But maybe I just misread.
Yeah, see, and me, when you click on seasonal, I think it should just be in your face, or should have been, and maybe it is now, where it says, hey, we didn't tell you about this, or maybe you missed it, but go and log into your character right now, and then log out and come back. Like,
yeah,
that would have saved me 48 hours.
The reason that I could do all the stuff that I did with the first time, like the day, is because I just log in my main character obsessively every day, no matter what. Even if I'm not playing them, which I haven't been because of the season, I log them on every day because I want to make sure, okay, what do I have on this character? What has this character done? In fact, when I logged on the first time, for some reason, I only got 5 of the, you know how you get 2 from each zone because you can get the renown for map discovery?
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, one of those boxes wasn't fully filled in, and I had to go on my main and run around to go find enough of Altars of Lilith and Hawazar to get Hawazar up to the second box filled in, the second renown thing. And it was like, that's, I remember doing it because I was thinking to myself, I know there's going to be a complication. I know there is. And there was. And so I ended up having to run around and do that. So yeah. Other than that, though, I actually, have you guys gotten to fight a lot of the malignant things? Because I created a character just to go fight them. And they are ridiculous, and I kind of love them they do some strange, strange things, man.
I was gonna say, I haven't, but I've been watching like a couple of my buddies play it, and it feels like, I don't want to say like in, I'm not air quoting improved AI, but it feels harder to predict what they're going to do, and it feels a little more challenging from what I'm watching, which is good because let's be honest, the very few things, at least for me on my, and maybe it's because I was playing a bear druid and having to max out fort. But like nothing, I felt unkillable all the way straight through to the end. Like, I think I died twice and it was because I was dumb. But like now it's like, people are like, I got to work for it. And I'm like, okay, that's intriguing. I like when I have to work for it in Diablo.
Yeah. It is interesting. The fights definitely feel different. I haven't gotten to do a malignant tunnel yet, but that's coming up, pretty soon, I hope. Liz, anything else you want to say before we move on?
No, y'all covered it.
All right. Then at this point, we're actually going to go do some questions y'all sent in. We actually have a fair amount, one of which I freely admit I stole from Lore Watch, but you know, basically it's been sitting there in the queue since the beginning of last month and nobody took it. So
yeah, nobody took it. I mean, it's not like we were busy doing other things, maybe covering Diablo games or anything.
You weren't, but I felt bad, so I decided I'd grab it. So anyway, if you have a question for this podcast, please either send it to our podcast email, which is podcast@blizzardwatch.com, subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. When you do that thing where you say it's for either show, that's also a problem, guys, because then Joe keeps like wanting them. He always wants them, and then I have to drug him and put him on an airplane.
We are going to move past this conversation.
he wakes up going, "You gave me a drugged ham sandwich, didn't you?" "Yes, I did, Mr." But all the, I mean, seriously, man, I can't let myself sidetrack into that. Also, if you want to answer this question, but you don't want to send an email because you're afraid of the ham sandwich thing I just mentioned, you can go to our Discord server. We have the Q&A podcast questions channel, which is for non-patrons. You can absolutely ask questions there, and at least one person has. Or you can go to our patron Q&A podcast questions channel if you are a patron. We love everybody, whether or not you're a patron. If you want to ask us questions or interact with our stuff, it's great. We love it. But we do feel like we have to kind of try and like throw some love the patrons' way because, you know, paying to keep the lights on, and that's important. I'm going to read some questions here and let these guys answer because it's been working really well lately. So first one is from Gnorsha. This is the one I stole, and I admit. With active hostility between Horde and Alliance cooling off, both in the story and the game mechanics, do you think there's any value in introducing a new playable enemy faction? Like if players were allowed to roll Primalist characters or Kiraji or whatever the next big or even old enduring enemy is? Does World of Warcraft need to have active tensions dividing its player base to be World of Warcraft? Or do you think the world can move beyond that and should? Would love to hear your opinions on this. And that's from Norsha. No pronunciation guy, but I'm pretty sure I got it with Norsha. So yeah, which one of you guys wants to answer this one first?
Liz.
Okay. Liz?
I mean, I don't think Warcraft needs conflict. I mean, it doesn't need conflict between players. I don't think you need to have a big war where everyone hates everyone in order to have Warcraft. But I am actually a big fan of having more factions. I like the idea of having factions that aren't based on what your racial choice is, but are based on, you know, what you're doing, what your character is invested in. Like you could join the Cenarian Circle, which is not they have goals. Most of them are druids, but not all of them are druids. But organizations like that, where you have organizations that don't have this nationalistic focus that you see on the Horde and Alliance, but they're just like, okay, we're here. We've got work to do. We don't care if you're Horde. We don't care if you're Alliance. We're here to do a job. You can help us or you can leave, but please stop killing each other right in the middle of our camp. Thank you. I think that could be really interesting, kind of to expand the game in that way.
So I think conflict and tension is something that takes a lot of forms, and it doesn't always have to be combat. It doesn't always have to be something focused on the faction exchange, right? We've already seen that. We're seeing the move away from it. We're seeing that players are responding well to it. It does not affect PvP at all. People that want to PvP are still PvP, and they're not feeling obligated to stop all of a sudden. And I think that story-wise, where we're at and where we've been for the last, I would say, several years has already been moving heavily away from faction conflict like that. It doesn't want to. It doesn't need to be the centerpiece anymore. And I think that's okay. And you can do things like, you know, Matt and I have talked about this a lot on Lore Watch, where it's like, yes, we would like to see us stumble upon other civilizations. We had a whole episode about Avaloran. And what that might be and what that might mean. And especially now that we've seen the new Timeways stuff and the new Mega Dungeon and the stuff with the Bronze Dragonflight storyline, there's some other implications potentially that are there waiting for us, maybe in the next patch, who knows. But the idea of running into another culture that has nothing to do with the Titans or views the Titans as like a nuisance, you know, whatever the case is, that could be very interesting. Not in the way of the Primalists, but maybe like a Primalist on a six on the dial of 11. You can do stuff like that that really make it rewarding. Like, you know, learning
Primalists, you're at a 15 right now, and I really need you at a four.
More or less.
Just bring it down. Just I like the energy, but you're burning us with it. So just drop it down.
But I mean, you can have very compelling stories that don't need to have a war.
Yeah, or for that matter, if you do want to do a war story, you can do a war story where we're fighting something else. We don't have to always be fighting each other. I mean, most of World of Warcraft's life wasn't the Horde and Alliance weren't directly at war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had conflicts, yes, but they weren't actually fighting each other that much. And in original World of Warcraft, classic World of Warcraft, now you would call it. the original 1-60 world, we teamed up to fight the Karagi.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a big deal. The Might of Kalimdor was an army consisting of Horde and Alliance together.
Yeah, and that was a huge like cross server event where you were gathering resources and everything else, and everybody was contributing to it.
Yeah, and it didn't make you buddies. It's not like it's not like the Horde and Alliance were going to sit around a campfire and sing, you know, the orcish equivalent of Kumbaya, but they were, you know, they were working together while still remaining who they were. And there was no need to make there be an artificial conflict between them when there were giant monster bugs that wanted to like kill everybody. You could focus on the real problem.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like the and Matt and Liz, you'll probably get this, and maybe some of our younger listeners won't, but like Enemy Mine, the old 1985 sci-fi flick, right? And I think it was based off of a book. I don't remember. I think it was like based off of Longyear or something like that. But like, yes, there's this whole faction war, this intergalactic war where the humans and this alien race are at battle with each other. And then one of each just crash land on the planet. And then you have Dennis Quaid, you know, and I forgot who played the I think it was like Henry Solo or something like that. Learning to coexist because if they could fight each other, they could kill each other. They could try to kill each other. But they have other things to worry about, like surviving on this planet that, you know.
It was Louis Gossett Jr., by the way.
Oh, Louis Gossett Jr. was Jeruba. That's right. Yep. Man,
had to look that up to be sure.
I am happy that my memory is as intact as it is about that. But regardless, like that was a movie that, even though it was a sci-fi film and it had plenty of like, you know, had these action-y moments, was all about that drama and suspense. And they weren't actively fighting each other. They were learning to coexist, and we still have a lot of that to do in Warcraft. Like there's a lot of learning to live with, like, you know, between orcs and humans, or, you know, where night elves or elves in general fit into the world now. Like there's a lot that you could do that doesn't actively involve war.
Well, look at what Liz was talking about, the idea of like, you know, the game could use other factions. The game actually has all these other factions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're just not
playable. Like you can go and do some quests for them and you can earn reputation with them. But we've seen that there's other ways to do that kind of reputation. For all that people, like I hear Shadowlands get a lot of criticisms, but how they handled those playable groups, I'm calling them factions.
The Covenants.
The Covenants. The way they handled Covenants
was really well done.
It's a blueprint mm-hmm. for how you could handle new factions in World of Warcraft or old factions that are doing new things.
Mm-hmm.
You could honestly, yes, you've got a with the Covenants, you had a reputation with them, but it translated to your membership in that Covenant. It wasn't just you show up and do some stuff for them. You're considered a member. And that's something that could be taken and iterated on in future World of Warcraft.
And
so you could have those factions, and I'd love to see some of them.
And we kind of had that with the Class Order Halls.
Yeah, but that was more class-based.
But sure, but I mean, the same core idea, though, right? Because, like, look at the Paladins. Paladins had Horde and Alliance. You had a Nathrezim sitting there as well, yeah. Right? Like, you had the Shaman had Horde and Alliance, but they also had Magda.
Magatha Grim Totem.
Yeah.
I think the big difference there is that, like most of the organizations during Legion, the class halls were not like big previously explored lore things. I mean, the Order of the Silver Hand, I believe, was the Paladins, unless they did something new and original there, which I don't remember. But I mean, I see it interesting that you could tie into these big lore elements that are already exist in World of Warcraft, and you could tell interesting stories about things people have already kind of committed to or interested in. That was maybe a failing of Shadowlands, because the Covenants were really well done and it had a lot of really interesting content, but it was also, it's this world off in outer space in the afterlife, and there was a little bit of, okay, I mean, this is nice. Why do I care? Can I go back home now?
You
could bring up some really new, cool stories about things that we already are invested in.
Yeah, so like you could totally have the Rogue Order Hall, like could have been based, is kind of like a continuation of Ravenholt. Imagine if you had the Ravenholt as a faction and it didn't just hit rogues. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are interested in subversive activity against anybody, here's a meeting hall for that. You can be, you don't have to be like a thief. You can also be one of our guards, or you can do healing magic for us.
Become a member of SI7 for that love, for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like SI7 and whatever the Horde equivalent is, I don't remember. They used to have one.
It's something, the something of whispers.
Yeah. But you those are like still kind of faction oriented, but you could totally have like Ravenholt become the meeting ground where, yeah, I'm in this Horde order, you're SI7 in the Alliance, but we still have to talk sometime. And this place could be the place to do that. People could come together and have discussions on these kind of topics. Like, you know, we're getting some chatter that the Twilight's Hammer are back. Oh, no, that's not the Twilight's Hammer. They're just using the name. They're actually demon worshippers. Yeah, we got some information on that. And you could imagine playing around with that idea of like the Berlin in the 50s and 60s, but in Warcraft. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole, you know, Soviet agents, U.S. agents, British agents, everybody coming together and conflicting and yet not fighting, because, you know, there's ways to like win ideologically that you could be dealing with. I just feel like there's a lot of room for this, like the idea of making factions a thing, like not just, you know, a place where you go and I look, here's some more Scourge Stones. Can I have my amulet yet? No. Okay. I'll be back when I've got more Scourge Stones for you. Make it into, imagine if you join the Argent Dawn and become a member, like, and you're now dedicated to preventing the Scourge from spreading, and that's your deal. Like, and that's, there's a lot of missions you could go on because, like, oh, we've heard about this necromancer who used to live in this place, and he apparently understood how to stop the plague more effectively. Go there and get that. And there's a lot of room for all of it. So I'm really, the more I think about it, the more excited I get. How much time do you have left before I keep babbling?
Dragonflight kind of did her. Went in this direction with the whole Rathian civilian thing, earn reputation with one or the other, but it didn't feel as meaningful. Just because, one, you can earn reputation with both.
Mm-hmm.
Two, because they're both kind of smarmy jerks. I mean, neither of them is like a great guy that you really want to help out. It's just like,
I feel maybe. Like 10.1.5 and 10.1 before it kind of fix that for me.
Yes.
I now feel like Rathian and Sibelian both had their good points, but unfortunately you needed somebody like Abyssian because you needed somebody who could, for lack of a better word, and I don't want to sound creepy here, someone who could harness the two of them together.
Yeah.
Where, okay, I need some of Rathian's, I won't quit, but I need some of Sibelian's, I'm going to actually think about what I'm doing. So how do we get both?
And I also think the two, Rathian and Sibelian, kind of resolving their differences turned into a really great story. I think some of the best voice acting in Dragonflight so far, and we've had a lot of great acting in Dragonflight, is Rathian and Sibelian in Avaris. I mean, I think the line I remember is going into the Neltharion fight, where you've been going through Avaris, and for the entire time, it's like you think, oh, I'm following this shadow of Neltharion, and he's totally Neltharion, and we're talking to Neltharion, and you, the player, are like, oh god, these stupid dragons, come on, of course it's not Neltharion. And, you know, you get to the Neltharion fight, and, like, just before things start, you know, Sibelian's like, where's Sarkareth? You were leading us to Sarkareth, and Rathian says, he was never leading us to Sarkareth. And just kind of this calm realization. And that's such a good moment where you see them, both of them kind of seeing the wrongs in the past and eventually kind of coming together in this realization. And it's such a great character moment because you see Sibelian as this decisive, combat-focused leader who will go in and get things done. And you see Rathian as this, he's more of a thinker. He's thinking about things, and he's
noticing,
and he worries about things.
Yeah. He's noticing all the inconsistencies that Sibelian isn't, but he's not saying anything just yet, 'cause he's not sure what they mean. Yeah. And there's a lot of that to that interplay.
And there's also a weird insecurity from both of them where Rathian is worried about, he was created by experimentation, and Sibelian is suddenly recognizing that, okay, Neltharion did some things that were morally questionable, maybe a tiny bit. So that's, I think that's an example of how you can tell really interesting character stories, that there's definitely some conflict there, You know, yeah, Rathian and Sibellian have been bickering since the beginning, but you're seeing interesting personal stories for both of them.
That don't have to be about, oh, by the way, I hate you because you have green skin. Green skin?
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I thought that was really well done.
Do you think we have time for one more? Or
let's do it.
I can do one more.
All right. We're going to try. I don't want to do that one because it's kind of Jack. I think. No, it's just Jack. Okay.
Just Jack.
With the current corporate trend of what if we did a multiverse, and with the Blizzard multiverse game, Heroes of the Storm, you know, rip RIP to a real one, in maintenance mode, what other things did Blizzard do too soon that could work better now? Bloodthorn. Okay, anyway. I mean, at the time, Bloodthorn worked fine and people liked, but yeah. I'm telling you, there's like,
it's on tap.
Oh, man. I could do so much with it. Anyway, go ahead, you guys.
I mean, if I'm going to pick one thing, I'm going to say Ghost. Like, I think that it, in today's day and age with today's technology and today's sort of enjoyment of story first person shooters, and there is still a lot of it, they could have easily had that project work now better than it did before, because Ghost kind of sort of maybe helped inform a little bit of Overwatch, but that was more the other MMO project that had been talking about for years that maybe turned into that, and the two of them combined together. But we didn't really get, and again, we didn't get it with Overwatch 2, and I will probably complain about this every week. I'm sorry, folks. Like a story-driven first-person shooter, they could have easily done that years later. And like we were talking about on the pre-show, we were talking about games like Dishonored. We were talking about games like Cyberpunk 2077. These have that first-person story-driven experience. Imagine that in the StarCraft universe. Imagine how cool that would be right now. StarCraft is another one that's sort of in maintenance mode that, you know, we're not really hearing anything about. I personally think that they were to turn around and announce a first-person shooter game that was story-driven, campaign-based, based off of StarCraft, I would be extremely happy, and I think it would do really well right now.
Liz?
I mean, I feel like Heroes of the Storm didn't come too early necessarily, but it came too late. Mm-hmm. It kind of like, by the time it arrived on the scene, MOBAs were such, they were so well established.
Yeah, even Warner Brothers one had closed up shop right when Heroes of the Storm released, because Warner Brothers had one that was in beta, the DC Crisis, and that wound up getting shelved because it was just too late.
So, yeah, I think they jumped on that one too late, and then it didn't work and they closed up. But it's like, it's not, I don't think it would do any better today. If anything, I think it would do worse today because now we're even later. But
I think honestly, though, that's because they wanted a MOBA.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't trying to build a multiverse. They wanted a MOBA. I think if they actually sat down and tried to make a game that played off of their multiverse, instead of just, you know, okay, here's another MOBA, then it might be a lot more successful. We don't know, and we'll never know. So
yeah, they tried to build it into something it didn't start out as. I don't think they really pushed the multiverse thing hard.
Like every so often they did one, like that they would bring in Orphea or something like that. But yeah, generally speaking,
they added that character pretty late. They added Orphea pretty late. So it just didn't feel like it completely clicked. Like, it was a fun game. I played it for a while, but it was so late to jump in on the MOBA trend. And it was like, it was a good game. It was pretty polished. But this, at the end of the day, it's just another MOBA.
You know what it felt like to me? It felt like they were trying to do what World of Warcraft did to EverQuest with their game.
Yes.
But instead, they were yet another game trying to do to World of Warcraft and not being able to. If you think of Heroes of the Storm as the brash, like let's use one of many games that came out, Rift. Remember Rift?
Yeah.
Rift didn't kill World of Warcraft. Neither did so many other games. And just like that, Heroes of the Storm was never going to kill League of Legends.
Yeah, I think part of the problem, though, too, with it is that Heroes of the Storm, I think you're onto something. You mentioned that they're trying to do to MOBAs what WoW did to MMOs. WoW made MMOs accessible, which is why it had such mainstream success, right? The problem with MOBAs, like, you know, League of Legends is like the king of that, and we got to recognize that sort of game. But like, you can customize your characters, whether it's a talent build out and they have their system, their mastery system for it. And then you have items that you can build out and customize in the heat of the moment to sort of play a game of chess against your opponents. You couldn't do that in Heroes of the Storm. Heroes of the Storm, you had your talents, and that was it. There was no pivoting. Once you were done, you were done. Once you made your selection, you made your selection. And in theory, a simpler, accessible MOBA would be good, but the problem is that's not what people who want to play a MOBA are in for.
Now, yeah, they didn't succeed in getting people who didn't play MOBAs to play their MOBA, which was what they did with World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft is the game people who'd never played EverQuest or any other MMO came to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that just wasn't the case with MOBAs. I think to a certain degree, some games don't ever get that pop culture mass breakout.
No, it's very rare that it happens these days.
I will say this much, though. One thing that I honestly do, you know, the Blackthorn thing aside, although I do think that that game could come back, I think that when thinking about Heroes of the Storm and thinking about, you know, how come this didn't work, I think Liz has got a point about the fact that, you know, MOBA saturation had already gotten to a place where just you weren't going to get, you were, unless you managed to get a whole bunch of people who didn't play MOBAs to play your MOBA, it wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to, you're talking about StarCraft Ghost. And I think rather than the story-based shooter aspect of StarCraft Ghost that I think was a missed opportunity, it's the fact that StarCraft Ghost was in production and it stopped production in 2002.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed didn't come out till 2007.
Yep.
So a game about an assassin who wanders around making difficult kills for like an entity other than herself, AKA, you know, the Terran Empire or what have you, that would have been big.
Yeah. And that's why I said
at the right time.
I think it was just too early.
Yeah. But it's not just because it was too early, because you see a direct, you know, a direct follower, a direct game that came out a few years later that had that, you know, there was some other stuff in it. You know, obviously it was inspired by the Prince of Persia games, and obviously they had that whole Animus thing.
I mean, but Dishonored came out in 2012.
Yeah, and Dishonored does it in a different way, and it doesn't feel like an Assassin's Creed ripoff, but it's still basically that kind of gameplay. And Ghost was coming out, was trying to come out with it in the early 2000s. And I really feel like, you know, maybe, you know, maybe now is the time to look back at that idea and try again, because, but maybe it isn't. Maybe the window has passed.
See, I don't know, though, because they just did a re-release or an update to Thief, and it went really well.
Yeah, and they're doing a Prince of Persia side-scroller. I don't know.
Dead Space just got a high-definition rework. Crysis just got one.
The game that will still kill your computer.
Yeah, absolutely will still kill your computer. Like, there is a market for it. Like, I really do think that if they were to do something like that, there, I think, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop talking because I don't want to, like, beat a dead horse here. But, like, yeah, I think now would be a good time to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we're all in agreement that, you know, maybe Heroes of the Storm isn't the best possible game for this idea, because it doesn't feel like a game where they were even trying the multiverse thing until they realized, oh, God, we got to pivot to something. And unfortunately, the pivot was too little too late. Like Liz said, I thought Heroes of the Storm was fun to play.
I loved it.
We used to do streams, and I actually enjoyed Malfurion. Like, I played it and enjoyed healing on Malfurion. Don't know why, because he was just as insufferable. But
I got to play Magni and throw myself as people as the King of the Mountain or the Avatar of the Mountain. It was super fun.
Yeah, but it wasn't. Yeah, it was never going to be that genre-defining thing that World of Warcraft became for MMOs. It was a very tall order to try to do twice.
Yeah.
And actually, Blizzard has kind of done it twice, because Overwatch almost did it. I would argue that Overwatch at least continued to exist in a space where we had games like Team Fortress already, and definitely brought a different style of gameplay to them. It didn't crush anything, but, you know.
Now there are other hero shooters that sort of following in its wake.
Yeah, like, I mean, one of the best ones is probably Apex Legends, but you could make a case for a bunch of different ones. But
Valorant.
Yeah, Valorant. Oh, wow, Valorant feels very much like somebody just picked up Overwatch.
It's like, hey, you like Overwatch? Hey, you like CSGO? Let's just mash these two things together and go, and it did it well.
Yeah, I'll give him that. But regardless, I think at this point we're going to close things up. So, Joe, imploring stare.
Absolutely. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means that this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast with a queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you to Liz for the amazing answer on the last question, because that completely recontextualized everything I was thinking about it. That was really, really, that was one of the best ones we've done in a while.
Listen, to quote the song, we're better together.
Yeah. We are. Teamwork. And teamwork. The power of friendship.
Yeah. Teamwork makes the eye work. No, that doesn't work. Eyes, no eye and team. There's a me and team, though. But anyway, if you've got a question for the site, please send it to our email at podcast@blizzardwatch.com, podcast at BlizzardWatch for this show in particular. But you can also ask us questions for Lore Watch or for the eventual return of Tavern Watch once we get like a moment to breathe. And if you want to, you know, use our Discord, we've got the Q and podcast questions channel for just about anybody who wants to ask a question. Or you can use our patron Q and podcast questions channel if you're a patron, because, you know, again, we'd like you guys and you keep the lights on. And that, therefore, we're now wrapping up the end of the podcast. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us, and we will hopefully see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.